This is episode 2F of Free as in Freedom for Tuesday, August 14th, 2012. Hi, I'm Karen Sandler.
And I'm Bradley Kuhn.
This is Free as in Freedom.
We were had a hiatus of one episode, but we didn't mess with the numbering. So
we're
this
back.
Is the next number.
So this is Foxtrot and we were last
two,
at Echo.
No, Two Foxtrot.
Two Foxtrot, sorry. And we were last at
Foxtrot
Echo.
Was a long time ago.
It was.
That was Zero Foxtrot. It was a long time ago.
Yeah.
Yeah, I forget what episode number, but when we get to Foxtrot, we have a problem because we're two digits. But I figured out once it was a really long time till we get there. So I'm not too worried.
I'm not worried either. So we're back.
Well, we were, due to travel schedules, we couldn't record the previous episode. And because those of you who are a fan of Dan Lynch's other podcasts know that he does Rat Hole Radio on the opposite weeks of when Free as in Freedom comes out, and that's by design because we don't make him edit the Free as in Freedom show when he's on the weekends. He's recording Rat Hole Radio, which means we had to skip.
Because he's super awesome and does all this work for the show.
He's just a volunteer, so it's
we want to
keep fair.
His life easier if possible.
Yeah, it's really not fair to ask him to try to produce two podcasts in the same weekend.
Thank you, Dan Lynch.
So and Rat Hole Radio just doesn't produce. He also is the star.
Yeah.
Well, I guess the music he plays is the star, but he's the DJ.
Right.
So that's why there was no episode. We went to different conferences.
Right. Bradley went to OSCON. I was supposed to go to OSCON, but due to health issues, I wound up staying home. And then I went to GUADEC. So we barely overlapped. We had like a few hours in the same city, mm-hmm. but not enough time to record.
So I didn't go to GUADEC this year, although I usually go. In fact, I'm on the advisory board of the GNOME Foundation on behalf of the Free Software Foundation, which is actually the longest standing role that I've had in the free software community.
That's pretty cool.
Because when I worked as FSEV's executive director, I became the representative on the GNOME advisory board for FSF, and that was in 2002. And I stayed in that position even when I wasn't an employee of FSF anymore, and before I was on the board of directors, because some of our listeners may know that there was a period of time where I had basically no affiliation with FSF, other than that being the GNOME advisory
and
board.
And a member.
As associate member, but that's an affiliation only through money.
It counts.
It counts. I mean, it's actually how FSF is supported. It's primarily mm-hmm. supported by its associate members, and everyone should become an associate member.
I just renewed
member.
Mine.
But we have to be very careful and clear that it's a non-voting membership. You can't vote for the board of directors. In fact, mm-hmm. I think it's dangerous to be able to buy votes in a nonprofit.
I have to say, the longer I spend with GNOME, the more impressed I am with a membership structure where you have membership based on contributions.
Right. Well, that's
and then
good,
have
but
those members
money.
Be voting.
Right.
I was really a fan of the self-perpetuating board before. Mm-hmm. So of a board that basically invited new members and kept itself going. But having watched, you know, two turnovers now of the GNOME board and seeing how, you know, engaged people are in their community, I actually think that structure is really good.
But you can't buy votes in GNOME. You can't
donate
a bunch of money to GNOME Foundation and then get a vote.
No.
You have to actually contribute code or documentation or coordination work or volunteer work of some kind to
yeah.
GNOME.
Any contribution counts.
Yeah. So I think that's important. I'm actually kind of disturbed by the new OSI structure, which was announced at OSCON,
mm-hmm.
where you can buy
yep.
you can buy votes in OSI now. So I warned about this a long time ago that if OSI was talking about doing this, and I said those who want to mess with the OSI's license list will just buy up enough memberships to vote out licenses they don't like and vote in licenses they
like.
Well,
that's the trade association model. I mean, that's how.
But OSI is a C3,
right?
So.
Yeah. Yeah, but what I'm saying is that's, you know, that's the same similar problems that we've pointed out in the past about trade associations. It's sort of the same problem.
So are we getting to the point? This wasn't the topic we're going to discuss. Actually, we'll get to the topic we were going to discuss in a minute. But do you think that this is a danger for the license list for OSI?
I feel like it is. I hadn't actually thought about it before, so I'd like to think about it before I sort of come out with some opinion on our podcast. But
Simon's argument to me, I raised this directly with Simon.
I mean, is there a limit to how many votes that are no?
You just then individual gives money.
Because I saw this, but I hadn't.
Each individual, it was announced at Simon Phipps announced it at OSCON, and each individual can give money to OSI at some amount, and then they get voting rights in OSI. So I don't know if I can. I'm getting worried that I can't trust the OSI's license list anymore. I mean, not immediately, because it'll take a while for people to buy up their votes. The membership elects the board.
The membership elects the OIC.
So then they can elect a board that will approve licenses they like and kick out licenses they don't like. So, I mean, I'm worried about AGPL being yanked off the list because there's a lot of anti-AGPL sentiment. I'm worried about licenses being put on that don't fit the OSD. I mean, we already have a drift between.
I mean, how much discretion is there on the board for what is included and what isn't included in the license list? It's, I mean, they could amend the criteria.
Well, yeah, but they basically apply the criteria, and the criteria are nebulous, right? I mean, that's true of every license list. I mean, you have the open source definition, which
there are areas where I think the license list, there's some ambiguity, but I think largely the license requirements are pretty clear. I mean,
no, I we'll have to see what happens.
I mean, it's the same way like with the four freedoms, you know, like they're a very bold statement. You understand what they're about, but there are areas where areas that are gray that are harder to understand.
Well, I'm pretty disturbed about OSI selling its leadership.
That's really interesting.
It reminds me, it's sort of the kind of structure that clubs use. And there are C3 clubs that do this, where you, like a hockey club or some other type of club you get involved with, and you pay your dues to get access to, say, the community pool or the community ice rink or something like that. And those are paid memberships. And then they get voting rights. And that sort of makes sense when you have a shared resource that you're basically paying for together.
There are situations where you could see the voting situation is appropriate, but
not in this case.
It doesn't seem to be.
So that was something I saw announced that I was kind of, and I have already raised this with Simon Phipps, and he doesn't agree with me, which is fine. So I'm not like attacking him here, not having raised.
Did you ask any of the OSI board members?
I didn't really see many of them. They weren't around very much.
Okay. I'm gonna ask.
Yeah. So.
See if we can get some insight.
Okay. I mean, if you can get a guest on, that's fine.
Oh, I'm sure we could get a guest on.
Oh, that could be.
I can think of two that would probably agree now. Two board members who might.
Okay. Well, we'll see if that's possible.
That's a great idea.
And we should mention excitement for the next episode.
Teaser.
We have a guest planned so for the next episode that we promised before. So
are we saying who it is? No.
I don't know. It's up to you. I wasn't going to say, but you can say if you want to.
Well, I don't know.
Okay. Well, people be excited. They'll wonder who it is.
Okay.
It's someone we mentioned before. Okay. So you can go back if you have to listen to
my only hesitation episodes. Is that we once got a guest and that guest
lost. Yeah, it's true.
And that guest pulled the episode.
That's true.
So, you know.
Yep.
It's always true. Possible.
I don't think that's going to happen with this guy.
I don't think so either.
I mean, my recording difficulties could happen or something. That's true.
Yeah, that's true. Or schedule traveling.
So that was one thing that got announced at OSCON. Was there anything else worth reporting?
The thing that's worth reporting is that Bradley got an award.
Well, I wasn't going to say
that. I was going to say you in third person, but, you know, that you got an award.
Yeah, I didn't want to be the one to say that.
But that's, to me, it's one of the, it's probably the biggest news item that came out of OSCON this year.
Well, the awards are just a thing at the last day that they do now. The thing that was most important to me, I wrote I'll link to in the show notes, I wrote a acceptance speech because we weren't allowed to give acceptance speeches.
Yeah, I wasn't allowed to give one last year either.
And Carl Fogle told me he wasn't allowed to give one years ago so it's been a while.
But it was a better award when he got it.
It's true, it was a better award because it had a cash reward as well.
Yeah, but not so much by the time we got it.
Well, that was back when it was the Google O'Reilly Awards. Now it's just the O'Reilly Open Source Award.
Right.
But I watch enough award shows that I wanted to be like, I want to thank the Academy and the Hollywood Foreign Press. And I didn't get to do any of that.
Yeah, I was a little disappointed last year, too, that I couldn't say anything.
Yeah, because you have to thank the Hollywood Foreign Press.
Right.
It's funny. I watched the Golden Globes for years before, because my wife watches the Golden Globes, and I watched them with her for years until I finally asked her why everybody felt the Hollywood Foreign Press was so important. And she's like, that's who votes on the awards. And I was like, oh, Like, for years, I didn't realize why everybody at the Golden Globes thanked the Hollywood Foreign Press.
Actually, I didn't realize that either. That's interesting.
But that's why the first thing they say is, I want to thank the Hollywood Foreign Press, because they vote on that award. It's like at the Academy Awards saying, I want to thank the Academy, because the Academy are the people that vote to decide.
So you would have then said, at OSCON, you would have had to have said, I'd like to thank Tim O'Reilly. O'Reilly and past winners of the past recipients of the...
It's a secret... group. It says that wasn't published which group decided. So well, I think in past years it was.
It's past recipients plus some O'Reilly people.
Well, there's some non-O'Reilly people too, because I had people confidentially tell me that they were on the committee who were neither award winners
nor O'Reilly
people. Yes. Huh? But I don't want to say who they are, because I don't know if I'm allowed to. But anyway.
Actually, I know. I think it's also, it's basically, it's the previous, I think it's the previous committee plus.
Okay.
So is what I, 'cause I think I know who you're talking
yes.
about.
Yes. So that's the story. I mean, the most important thing for me for the award is the people that got it before that I'm now basically in that community with, like Evan Perdomo and Karen and Carl Fogel and Jeremy Allison and Harold Velta and all these other people who have gotten the award in the past
I'm really glad you got the award because you deserve it.
Yeah, it's and I haven't gotten any emails. Well, I actually got one email asking why I accepted an open source award and not a free software award, which my answer was very simple, that basically the award was clearly given to me for my work promoting software freedom, so I accepted it in the spirit it was given, which was for that work.
Of course.
And it's like, I mean, it could have been called the Joe Schmo Award for blah, right? But it was for my work.
Yeah, right? Exactly. I mean, that's how I felt about the medical devices work, which is what I think primarily got the... Well, I have no idea. It's a little vague what my award was for, but I took it happily. But all of the work that I've done has been for software freedom, so...
Well, the person who nominated us is trying to decide who to nominate next year.
Yeah.
Because...
Well, but I know for a fact that he wasn't the only person who nominated us, even though it was super awesome of him to nominate us.
Well, he's trying to figure out who he's going to nominate next year, because he wants to make sure he's always nominating the winner.
That's so great.
So we'll have to figure out who he should nominate next year, if they have the awards next year, which I'm wondering if they might not.
You think they might not? I was wondering that last year. It was such an afterthought, you know?
Yeah, it's fine. I mean, they
I think maybe they shouldn't give it to so many people.
Yeah, if they just gave one a year.
Yeah, I mean, it's or like the Python two,
award,
two or three.
Which they also give at OSCON the Python award for the Python community, which is only one person each year. And they used to give a Perl award. They used to give the White Camel, which they stopped getting. Actually, they probably still give the White Camel at the Perl thing, which I always miss, because there's an event that's often scheduled against it. So I haven't seen Larry Wall's talk in years, which is kind of sad. But Perl is also an afterthought at OSCON now, too, which is kind of sad. Perl is the COBOL of free software.
Interesting.
That's been my view for a long time. There are millions and millions of, probably hundreds of millions of lines of Perl code out there being maintained, and people writing new Perl 5 code from scratch for lots of projects in shops where they've been mostly a Perl 5 shop. And yet, it's not what people talk about all the time. Anymore. And that's exactly what happened with COBOL. There's still millions and millions and millions of lines of COBOL getting written new and fresh every year because lots of banks and health insurance companies and those sorts
government
of places,
agencies.
Government agencies still maintain systems in COBOL. And Perl's sort of becoming that. I think that's the reason
Fortran.
I say that, it's not an insult. Well, Fortran's relatively contained to the scientific community.
But there's so much of it.
It's a lot of it in the scientific community, it's true. But
so much of it gets written fresh.
Yeah.
It's the other thing.
But I think people forget that these pretty much any language that was once popular is going to live forever, basically.
And maybe not forever.
Well, for a very long time. I mean, COBOL is two generations old now, almost. I mean, it was a generation old when I started as a developer, and there were COBOL jobs. Some of these sort of side languages, I wrote a lot of Informix 4GL code, which I looked recently and there are still people writing that proprietary garbage. One of free software project I was going to start I was going to write something to make Informix 4GL compile with GCC and then have it run against MySQL or something. But it didn't seem really worth it.
I found out that my mother-in-law was a COBOL programmer back in the 60s.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of COBOL code,
which is interesting because she's not a technical person now, but I found that actually really inspiring.
The only command I know in COBOL is using.
I don't know any.
Yeah. I never wrote COBOL.
No, me neither.
I read some COBOL once.
Anyway, so I thought that was great that you won the award.
That's nice of you to say. I appreciate it.
It's awesome.
You're getting a laptop again. It's not good for your laptop.
It's not good for my laptop. I promise I don't do it very often.
So
I swear people at Zarezen, I treat my laptop great.
Anything else that happened in OSCON that we should mention? I don't really know. I don't think so. Okay. There wasn't very much going on there.
Was there a Floss Foundations meeting?
Well, the Floss Foundations meeting folded into CLS, and I don't go to CLS anymore, in part because it makes everything too long, because the Community Leadership Summit, which is John O'Bacon's conference, starts on Saturday morning, which means you have to arrive Friday, which means you're basically staying a full 7 days in Portland, because you have to get there by Friday night to be there Saturday morning. If you're coming from the East Coast of the U.S., pretty much anywhere, you're going to have to ride that way. So then you're there Saturday, Sunday, and then Monday, Tuesday are tutorial days at OSCON, so there's not as many people there, but you're there at that point, and then you have to be there Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and then you're leaving Saturday or Friday night if you're taking a red eye back to the East Coast. So I just couldn't do that anymore, that whole big OSCON. And CLS is... It's an unconference, and actually I had keynotes, like Jono keynoted, which was odd. Usually the organizer keynoting at their own conference.
Oh yeah.
Although Tim O'Reilly keynoted again this year.
Actually, I did.
Bothered me too. Actually,
I was asked initially to keynote Guadac, and I thought that was not really a great.
Yeah, exactly. It's the organizer.
Yeah, and I just feel like I'm very visible and present at Guadac. Nobody, needs to hear me keynote.
Yeah, and for example, the Evergreen project was considering, or actually somebody suggested that I keynote at the Evergreen conference, and I actually said no, right is when they suggested it. I said, no, that's not, Evergreen's part of conservancy.
But what we can do is we can be there as a backup plan. So I've done this before. If you can always be a backup plan if the speaker doesn't show. That's always true. Fun. Actually, I kind of like that. The being able to save the day
that's what we had to do when at FOSDEM on our track, actually. You and I had to do that as track organizers.
Yeah, we had to do that. I've had to do that a couple of other times too. So. It's nice just to be able to know you can give a talk if all else fails. It's not like you'll have to have an hour of nothing.
So
should we do like a little end of this segment and have a new segment?
To Backwatic? Okay, we can do that. So you went to Guadac and I didn't.
Guadac was super fun.
Okay.
Really intense.
Intense.
Well, so for me anyway, in part because, it's a conference that I was helping to run and organize, which I've never done before, really. And also because before Guadac, we had our all day, board of directors meeting, followed by our all day advisory board meeting, then followed by the core conference days, and then, buff and workshop days.
So did you guys make a conscious decision to put those first instead of last this time? Because
the board meeting and the advisory board used to be
after Guadac.
We talked about it a lot and thought that it made a lot of sense to have it before for a number of reasons, including helping advisory board members with travel. Because if we should do it after would have been to have it during the weekend. Mm-hmm. And we sort of thought it was better to have the board meeting before the advisory board meeting. Have the board members have to travel. And then people were frustrated last year that they had to miss so much of Guadac to attend the meetings when they were on the same, when they overlap with the conference itself. So that's why I don't know what we'll do next year, because I think this year people sort of were so burnt out by the end. There's so many days of intensity that maybe we do want to overlap a little bit. I think the thing is you can't go to everything and participate fully in everything, because eventually it's a long haul. After all those days, you just start to become a little bit less productive anyway. It was good. And also it was intense for me as well, because I'd had the health issues leading up to Guadac. So, I didn't get all of my doctors to give me permission to go.
Well, you got back safely.
But so. I went anyway. Yeah. But it was one of those things where I had to be extra careful to make sure I didn't exert myself physically, and Mike went, and my husband, and helped immensely by driving me from door to door and, you know, making sure that everything was easy. So that was great. But the conference was just amazing. There are a lot of, I don't know if our listeners are following the press, but there are a lot of high-level issues being discussed at GNOME right now. And the thing that was so cool about GWADEC is that we had a lot of these discussions out in the open in ways that invited everybody to partake and to voice their opinion. And there were no incidents that I'm aware of any, you know, at all during the entire conference of anyone being treated disrespectfully, of anyone not, you know, having a chance to voice their opinion. So many times at free software conferences, you know, there are situations where people get shut down, where there's a slightly jerky response or something like that, you know, something where a core group of people wants to be able to lead the show and not, you know, and usually there's one or two instances where people feel excluded. And I don't think that happened at all at this time.
And I wrote this in my blog post about GWADEC at The Hague, which was, I guess, 2 years ago. Was it 2011? No, what was The Hague? 2011?
2010,
yeah. So it was 2 years ago. Did I miss two GWADECs in a row? Where was 2011?
2011 was a desktop summit.
Desktop summit. Oh, I didn't miss that. That was in Berlin. Yeah, but it was 2010 GWADEC in The Hague, and I wrote in my blog post after it. GWADEC is basically the only, it's going to sound horrible when I say this, but is only the only free software conference. That's not true, because the Evergreen conference was this way too. But most free software conferences, they don't actually really... they aren't so good that they really make you want to contribute to the project. And I found this actually was true of the Evergreen conference as well. I went to recently for the Evergreen project and for GWADEC, where you go to the conference and it actually makes you want to contribute to the project. And you feel like if you're not a major contributor when you go there, initially you want to be. And I actually stayed around for the Hackfest day at Evergreen conference because of this, because and part of it was because the Evergreen community is a much more diverse community than most of our free software communities. Most of the people showed up at Evergreen conference were users, not developers. So developers were actually the minority there. I mean, I don't know if that's true of GWADEC. I mean, GWADEC's always been the users and developers.
It is, but it's very heavy on the developers. That's something I want to work on for next year, to see if we can actually get more of a users conference there going as well, because I think that's, you know, one of the things that we want to do is to, you know, is to really take solid, you know, input and feedback from users and, you know, have really good training tracks and things like that.
So I think, well, that might be helpful. GNOME 3 might be helpful with that, because there's a lot more users can do to configure their environment than was possible under GNOME 2, because they have the JavaScript engine and people can actually write, users can actually write a little bit of code.
Extensions.
It's very, very much, it's sort of like, I mean, you basically, I haven't said this yet, but GNOME 3 is just basically reinventing Emacs. You realize that?
Whoa.
Right? Well, because it's making...
Whoa, what?
It's putting a scripting language into the center of the project. I mean, that's really... If you strip away all the interface issues and what buttons do what, which was, I know there was a big arguments about that, the big change in GNOME 3 is that the centerpiece of the interface is the JavaScript engine. And that's what made Emacs popular. So, I mean, given Emacs' success, GNOME 3 was popular, right?
That's
because,
funny.
Because it's completely scriptable and everything is scriptable in the JavaScript interface.
Well, getting back to, so that's really interesting. I'll have to think about that. But getting back to what you said about the community at, the GNOME community at GWADEC being very welcoming. And well, you know, I did want to say that actually it's funny because Mike, you know, who's really just hanging out to make sure that I was able to get around okay, he wound up attending a lot of talks and hanging around. And he came out saying, boy, I really want to write some code for GNOME. Yeah. It was really neat. But one of the things that was different this year was that there was a real effort made by our outreach team to incorporate, you know, our formal newcomers. So the people who participate in the Google Summer of Code and the outreach program for women. And what we did was, we had these outreach games. So basically we made teams of the outreach participants. And they each had tasks. It was kind of like, sort of like a scavenger hunt. But what they, you look so horrified.
I wouldn't want to do this, but.
But what it was going around to GNOME hackers and asking them questions like, what was your first GWADEC? Things like that. And so what was neat about that was that people, they had an excuse to talk to some of the, you know, they had to find out who had been to every GWADEC. They had, you know, they, so, you know, things like that gave them excuses to talk to a lot of the people who are potentially, intimidating for newcomers to talk to, and they had reasons to talk to them, and it resulted in them feeling a lot more integrated. And what was great about it was a lot of the questions were filmed. And so we had all this great footage of a lot of great core GNOME people talking about GNOME. So, I mean, it was great because we also have, materials coming out of it that we can show, for GNOME's, 15th anniversary, which is coming up, and actually will be the day after, I believe, this podcast comes out. So happy birthday, GNOME.
So is that the date? Is that done by the date of
the email?
Federico's and Miguel's email?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So, so that's exciting.
I'm just laughing because I actually received, I'm obviously old because I actually received that email, I think, into my inbox.
But what's,
for whatever list I was on, it got forwarded to.
That's cool.
Yeah, but it just makes me feel old.
But I'm excited about this because not only did they do that, but we also had we had a lightning track session where, the outreach participants were able to share their, give short presentations about what they're working on. And in the past we've done that, but it's been just, one session amongst many, but this year we made it a keynote track. And I think that what evidenced how well these outreach efforts are working is that keynote track was very, very well attended. It was pretty much full. Mm-hmm. And everyone there was completely into all of the presentations. It's like by the time we got to that session, which was at the end of sort of towards the end of the core days, everybody knew some of the outreach participants, were rooting for them. For some of these participants, it was the first kind of presentation they were giving, and it was only 3 minutes, but it was great. And you just got this sense of that there's a real priority being in the community, just a personal priority towards newcomers and towards people who are just starting to contribute. And it was just awesome and overwhelming.
So how did you end up funding all the outreach program participants and Summer Code people to come?
So we did put a premium on, we did prioritize them for travel.
Right, within the GNOME regular travel budget.
Yeah, within the GNOME regular travel budget. Google generously helped us with some of the Summer of Code travel. And we were, some people were only able to sponsor partially, but they're so jazzed about what they're working on, they covered the rest themselves.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing that worries me most about free software conferences. And I'm an odd duck in this regard, because I very early on saw the value of conferences. And actually, I got an email from winning the award from somebody I know named James Carter, that was somebody I knew in Cincinnati, and he's actually still a Perl developer. He and I were very into Perl when I lived in Cincinnati in the late 90s, and he and I used to go to the Perl conference and a few other conferences, and it was very difficult to go to them because we didn't have the money to do it. And my wife actually reminded me, she says, James, isn't James the one you both had to sleep in the car that night? And which we did. We would rent a car the last night rather than a hotel, because a car rental is so much cheaper, and then you sleep in the car and your flight's the next morning, right? And we used to do that, we used to get get fine parking lots where we didn't think the security was going to come knock on our door for sleeping in the car and that sort of thing. I did all that because I realized early on that conferences were the central way to get involved in free software, and that's why I kept doing it. And did it. I mean, I couldn't, I guess I'm just too old now. I just couldn't do that kind of hard on your body kind of travel of not being able to sleep in a bed and all the sort of stuff that I used to do. I mean, there are times when I just stayed up all night. We just drove around and stayed up all night. Once we had four people all in the car, so we couldn't actually sleep in the car because it's too many people, and we drove around all night as an answer to the flight the next morning. That was for, I think, a Usenix.
Wow.
These conferences are hard to get to for people, and I mean, certainly OSCON has gotten to the point where it's a usual suspects. It was weird because they at OSCON they asked how many people was their first OSCON, and most of the audience raised their hands but most of them were people being sent by their company to learn about this open source thing,
right,
as it were.
Right.
My gut sort of tells me that the speakers are all the usual suspects at OSCON, and so I feel like to actually, I mean, we're going to need to do programs like this where we're getting people to conferences and funding them to go to conferences to basically make sure that we have newcomers who can do that.
It makes a huge difference. I mean, you know, a lot of our, you know, participants did spend out of their own pocket for a lot of it. But we did try to fund whatever we could, and it made such a big difference. And I have to say that the results of the outreach program for women have been really extraordinary. I don't think I wasn't at a single talk the entire WADEC where I was the only woman.
Well, that's good. I mean, that's made a difference.
And the women who were there were absolutely engaged and a part of what was going on. It wasn't like, and these aren't just the outreach program for women participants now. They're former participants who are now active members of the community. It's really cool.
Well, although the Evergreen Conference, I'm sure, had you beat, but
I'm sure. well, we're still true. Not great. I mean, you know, our percentages are still, you know, we're well less than 25%.
As far as I didn't see any numbers out of the Evergreen Conference, but I would say that the Evergreen Conference is probably majority women, actually.
Right. You said. Yeah. But for GNOME, this is a huge improvement.
I know.
And for free software projects generally, we're doing great.
Yeah, well, I think...
So then we can do a lot better.
I mean, this is what really got me interested in the specifics of Evergreen and how Evergreen is... There aren't many... sorry to go off on this. I think I talked about this on a previous episode, but I think it's important. So in April, when I went to that Evergreen conference, it really made me realize that obviously the outreach program for women that you're doing at GNOME is one way to get developers involved, but the way the Evergreen community is engaged more with its users, it means that users are crossing over to developers in some sense. And there are people, librarians who have done integration work who are now effectively becoming developers who were just librarians in the past, and now they're librarians. Well, not just, but the point is they weren't developers at all.
Well, actually,
and just users of the system. They just logged into it every morning to check books in and find materials, and now they're actually contributing code or integration information and stuff to the project. So I think engagement with users, and you talked about GNOME wanting to do that. I mean, that's something Evergreen has done really well because out of necessity, it is such a targeted application for a specific user base.
Yeah.
They were forced to have that kind of engagement with users, and I think going forward, other projects need to do that.
I mean, we've had great success with outreach program for women in terms of bringing in women who, you know, worked on marketing or design, who wound up realizing that they wanted to contribute in other ways to the project and who are now Summer of Code students. So what's great is we have had people come in who are, you know, coming in, you know, non-development roles who are now in development roles. So, which I think is a huge triumph.
And I think our guest next episode will have some things to say about engagement with users and writing end user applications in free software and trying to engage with those users. So that will be a nice for the archive of our podcasts. That will be a nice connector point, I think.
Yeah, really cool. Yeah. So I mean, GWADEC was so. I mean, that was the over like the undercurrent of atmosphere at GWADEC. It was one of real inclusion. We had about just under 300 participants this time. And an overwhelming number of them care deeply about the future of GNOME. And so we've had a lot of great discussions, and we've got a lot of work cut out for us going forward. But I have to say, it's ironic because there's all this, like, you know, negative press about GNOME at the time during GWADEC, when none of us were able to respond to it because we were, you know, having our great discussions and working on stuff. But it's funny because the actual impression at GWADEC was the opposite of what a lot of that press was.
But what about the future of Sawfish? Because I need to keep using Sawfish. And my GNOME 2 panel, see?
I did mention that you were using Sawfish. It came up at GWADEC. I forget how. But in some conversation with someone, they're like, somebody said, well, nobody's using Sawfish. And I said, well...
Well, somebody's maintaining Sawfish. I mean, it's not somebody in the GNOME community anymore. There was somebody in the GNOME community maintaining. I don't know if you know the history of Sawfish, but the main developer of Sawfish was hired by Apple to work on OS X.
Yeah, you talked about this in another episode, actually, which is how I know.
So now somebody else is maintaining it. It was idle for many years. And now it's like, I mean, you know, you can write your window manager in Lisp. I mean, everything should be like Emacs. I mean, that's really the point here is Sawfish makes window managers like Emacs. And I know I'll switch to GNOME 3 eventually because it makes the whole desktop like Emacs. Now the problem is JavaScript. That's the problem, because I don't like JavaScript.
You keep trying to derail me from talking about Guadec. Is there some reason
why? No, I just, you know, are you going to have a Lisp engine in GNOME next release? GNOME 3.3 or 4?
So there was just one more point I wanted to make about Guadec.
Is it about putting a Lisp engine in the GNOME?
It is not. It is not. I'm sorry.
Okay.
But I did actually just get rid of my Lisp books. It was, we were cleaning up, and I just, it's been a long time. The one other point that I wanted to make about our community and how productive and interesting Guadec was that, you know, no single company had greater than, I think it was 12% attendance at Guadec. And it wasn't the company that you think it would be that was that number.
No, I know who I think it would be, but I know enough about GNOME community to make the right guess.
Okay.
Do you want me to make the guess?
No.
Okay.
I'm just going to leave it at that.
Yeah, but I know what most people would guess, and I know what you're saying.
Right.
But I actually have a different guess.
But it was pretty well distributed. Yeah. So, it was great. That's all I'm going to say. I'm so excited to work. I mean, like, you know, coming out of Guadec, I'm so excited to work for GNOME. I'm really excited about all the things that we're working on, and it was a real, you know, sort of infusion of energy and focus. So I was just really excited to talk about that.
Okay. So we'll,
thank you.
You're welcome. I'm sure our listeners enjoyed it, and I think it goes to my point of people not being able to make conferences. I think one of the things, if we've done anything any good on the show, and maybe some people don't like it, but I think it is valuable to try and bring some of these conferences to folks who can't possibly go to these conferences. And I think a lot of I know because people say it to me on IRC. Like X1101, who basically says he can never make it to any of these conferences, can't go to these conferences. They're getting some content or some knowledge or some info about those conferences without actually being there.
And the videos from Guadec, they're still being processed now, but we were sure to take footage of all of our talks. So we'll have that, some of that material at least, not in the not too distant future. It's just it's all volunteer run.
And so are you not going to be at any conferences coming up because of pending?
I could give birth at any time now.
Okay. So
that would be an interesting end to the show.
Well, I was going to mention the conferences I'm going to be at coming up. So So I folks will have, by the time you heard this, you will have missed me at FOSCON in Philadelphia, which I'm speaking at, which I already spoke at a couple days ago, but by the time you hear this. But coming up, you can see me at LinuxCon North America, where I'll be speaking. And I'll also be speaking at least twice, and I might have a keynote. I'm still talking to them about this at Open World Forum in Paris in October.
Oh, cool.
So I don't know I'm definitely giving two talks about free software legal issues. And then I might do a keynote as well. It's all organized by volunteers, and some of the stuff's not clear. But that's okay, because volunteers, you know, they're volunteers. So. And it's reasonable. I will probably be at the Summer of Code Mentor Summit, in late October. And then in November, I'm going to be at, LinuxCon Europe, and, the talks, announced, haven't been accepted yet, but I have talk proposals in, and I think I might be speaking, but I'll at least be there, if nothing else.
And I will most likely be at the GNOME Boston Summit in the first week in October.
Okay, I won't be at that.
Okay.
I thought it wasn't going to be in Boston this year.
It was in Montreal last year. There was some discussion about where it was going to be, but Boston makes sense now. And I think, I think if it travels around North America a little bit, that wouldn't be bad. So I'm excited. Actually, it's really useful for me for it to be in Boston. It makes it possible for me to go.
That's good.
So, yeah, I'm excited. So
talk to you next show.
Thanks for joining us. Freeze and Freedom is produced by Dan Lynch of Pod Factory and can be found at podfactory.org. Thanks to Mike Tarantino for our theme music. This episode of Free As in Freedom is licensed under the Creative Commons Attribution ShareAlike 3.0 United States license. You can follow Free As in Freedom, Bradley, and Karen on Identica, and also read Bradley's and Karen's blogs.
Links can be found on the Free As in Freedom website, faith.us. That's faif.us.